Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, I was your host, Evan Setter. I'm joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSetter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated as always. And Brendan, surprising after the weekend we saw back-to-back with the Suns. They were at Portland and at Golden State. The game at Portland, we could talk about just for a quick minute here because I think the second game was by far one of the most biggest wins or games in Suns recent history, in my opinion, in the last year or two. But quickly in Portland, they lost 127 to 120 on Saturday night, and it really wasn't that close. But then we go over to the Golden State game last night, less than 24 hours after they get kind of blown out by Portland, 115 to 111 against the defending champion Golden State Warriors. So just to quickly recap this weekend, Brian, what was your initial thoughts?
Crazy to have it turn out that way. I think if I was guessing what would happen, if you told me they're going to win one of the games and they're going to get, like you said, I mean, they were basically blown out in Portland. It kind of got close late. They outscored the Trailblazers by 18 in the fourth quarter, but I would have said for sure that it would be the other way, and I think I'm not alone there. For the Suns to go to Golden State on the second night of a back-to-back and put together not only a well-played game, Igor Kokoshkov always says you have to play hard and you have to play well. And that sounds simple, but especially for this team, we've seen it be one or the other so many nights where, you know, they're good, they're being aggressive, they're kind of going crazy, but they still lose, or they play really well, but their effort's just not consistent. To do that, both of those things against the best team in the league, on the road, on the second night of a back-to-back, after such a miserable loss the night before, really speaks volumes, I think, about why this stretch is so much different. As we talked about last Thursday, the numbers and everything kind of said that it was a little more sustainable than what they did in December. And I think this victory over Golden State really cemented that they look like and are playing like a completely different team, and they can keep winning games like this.
What's big for me, Brian, is the three of the last four wins have come against LeBron's Lakers, Giannis' Bucks, and now Stephen Curry's Warriors. And you look at December, though, those wins were coming against teams like Dallas, who's really struggling right now, Minnesota, New York, Boston. They play Washington and Brooklyn close in Orlando. These three teams are way different than those four or five teams that we mentioned in the Eastern Conference. And like you said, this kind of shows some serious growth here, this team.
Yeah, exactly. The competition is another thing, too. Even though some of these wins were at home and that stretch in December was on the road, just the difference in the level of competition was pretty obvious. But we're going to focus on the Warriors game a little bit more because, A, they won, and, B, we know that's what you guys want to hear about. So, Devin Booker. We were just talking before we got on the air, and, I mean, we would love, you guys should chime in on Twitter if you have any other opinions here, but to me, this was the best game I've ever seen him play. When you talk about a near triple-double, one of the best scoring nights of his career, the efficiency, coming in clutch in the fourth quarter when the Suns fell down seven, they went on like a 28-12 run immediately after falling down, or I think it was if they fell down 8 points, and just altogether competed on defense, got a couple steals late, stole the ball from Clay to open the fourth quarter. Just a really perfect game from him. And I think considering that it was against the Warriors too, to me, that's the best he's ever played.
I totally agree with you. I think the 46-point game in Philly could give some qualms to some people, but I think that 46-point game was some of those points were in garbage time and they were up by a couple more points. And then also, I think most of those damage was from three too. But this game, 37 points, 8 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals on 13 of 23 field goal attempts, 9 of 9 for the free throw line. Like you said, it's just the quintessential Booker performance, in my opinion, especially against the Golden State Warriors, and especially when you're down by 13 points at the end of the first quarter, that outscored them by 17 points over the final three quarters, led by your star player, who's only 22 years old, by the way. It just speaks to if this can continue, Brent, just a possible turn of the corner with this kind of game, because this is the game that I think if you're in the Phoenix Suns front office, this is the game tape you send to every single agent out there for the summer.
Yeah, I think that's the type of and it was on NBA TV, which, you know, that's not a super big audience, but a little bigger than normal. And to do it, it's I want to actually one thing I want to mention, maybe we could really get into it later in the podcast, talk about kind of the bigger picture of this game, but it's kind of crazy that they did this, this whole stretch really, as a response in part to, maybe not a response, maybe that's assuming too much, but that they put together this stretch of play starting the day that Igor Kokoschkov was rumored to have his job on the line. It's kind of insane to think back where we were two Mondays ago. Is Igor going to be fired and now coming off a win on the road against the best team in the NBA? It's just, for it to happen right now is even crazier than just wins in general. This stretch of play against this level of team with the chaos that it came out of has just been wild.
It really is, and it kind of just speaks to, I think, the team rallying around. We don't know if the players knew about it before, but obviously they do after that Miami game release, because they probably saw their Twitter accounts and all.
If they follow Gambo.
Yeah, of course. If they follow Gambo 987, they'll know. But I think it's just interesting that, like you said, they rally from that point, and now they're playing like this. But I think also it just speaks to the people who were calling for Igor's head for the last 2 months. I mean, I won't take any deflection of the blame here for it. I mean, I myself was pretty frustrated here at Kokoschkov at times the past few months, but I mean, he was signed, or he was hired by the Phoenix Suns as a player development maven. And really, if you look at the past few weeks, Brent, I mean, Devin Booker, Tyler Johnson, DeAndre Ayton, Kelly Oubre, Mikal Bridges, they're all playing possibly their best basketball of their careers right now.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because I'm writing about how things are kind of, how this situation and these players are giving us the first glimpse of what it can look like for Booker going forward. And even, you know, Tyler Johnson didn't have that incredible of a game yesterday, but was pretty solid against Portland and has been really good for this whole stretch of play. Made a couple big buckets against Milwaukee that people will remember, and then had a cutting layup in the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter yesterday too. But I think it's interesting. I was going back to and listen to the post-game comments that Booker made after the win over the Knicks, and he gave a lot of credit to Igor, which I didn't remember, but the first thing he said when he was asked about, you know, what the game kind of felt like for him getting so hot, scored 41 in that game, and he said the out-of-bounds plays and the set plays were really helping him, which is the first time I can remember him or anyone else really keying into that as a strength of the team. I think we see it, of course, watching, and they talked about learning that system a lot early on, but I think we're seeing with Johnson, Oubre, even Troy getting in there a little bit more lately and Bender starting. I think they're just finding a rhythm throughout the whole 48 minutes that's working. And even with Josh Jackson not playing incredibly well, I think they're getting contributions up and down the roster for the first time all season. But what did you think the one thing to keep on Booker here would be? We didn't see D'Anthony Melton or Jamal Crawford. Both Juwan Evans and Eli Okobo were at the G League. So first time in a while we've seen Booker be the starting two and the backup one. Daniels got 20 minutes, really didn't do much, missed all four of his shots, including a step back with the clock expiring in the middle of that fourth quarter. What did you think about seeing that look again? And do you think that was a sign of things to come, or just a matter of circumstance, or maybe something where Booker's getting a little healthier and so they're going to go back to that more?
I didn't mind it really at all, because I think we've been preaching to the choir about Trey Daniels getting more minutes for the past few weeks, and him getting around 15, 20 minutes per game, I think, is the most realistic outcome here. And I think they mentioned Jamal Crawford probably wasn't going to be playing back-to-backs much anymore. Yeah. So I think that's probably playing to that point here with the Golden State game. So I expect Crawford back in the rotation here. But more on D'Anthony Melton, I feel like he's probably the guy who's getting squeezed out here the final 6 weeks of the regular season, because really Melton, I don't think he's going to maybe play a single minute the rest of the season. They're playing like this because I think they're trying to win games. Obviously, they're trying to win games the final stretch of the season. They're not tanking. So I think this could be a fun little stretch here. But unfortunately, I think D'Anthony Melton might get squeezed out of the process of that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think. If Daniels keeps playing this poorly, I think we might see Igor mess with that final spot in the rotation a little bit more, whether that's Crawford or even on the second night of a back-to-back, if or whichever night he sits, maybe we do see some of those youngsters still. I think if last night showed that that spot is sort of inconsequential anyway. They won the game with pretty negative, the spacing, of course, that Daniels provides is helpful. But other than that, it's not like he really impacted the game, and they still won with him playing 20 minutes. So not too much of a difference, but is there anyone else that you want to hit on? I think the play that stands out to me individually are two plays from other guys outside of Booker in that fourth quarter run. Suns outscored Golden State 36-31 in the fourth quarter last night.
I just want to speak really quickly about featured defensive player of the year, Mikal Bridges, because
yeah, go for it. That wasn't one of the two plays I was going to say. So perfect.
Those last few minutes, he, by the way, he finished 10 points in 27 minutes. He also chipped in 3 steals, 2 assists, and 4 rebounds on 2 of 3 from 3, 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Just Mikal Bridges, he was in the closing lineup, and he should continue to be in the closing lineup at this point because it shows magnificent results of those guys out there instead of Bender or Jackson with those 4 guys. But speaking more of Mikal Bridges personally for a second, I mean, that steal at the end on Stephen Curry and also swiping Kevin Durant in the second half of that game, Not only do players never really do that, but also rookies never do that. So I feel like this is kind of a sneak peek into just how good Mikal Bridges can be, because we saw Kevin Durant kind of give the stink face back to Ayton after he made a jump over. Like,
that was awesome.
He never saw that coming, but I feel like Stephen Curry, they didn't show the cameras on him, but I feel like he might have done the same when Bridges stole the ball from
him. Yeah, it was an awesome night for Bridges, I think, overall, showing just kind of what he can do. Missed that 3 in the last 2 minutes of the game, open corner 3, when they were really just giving all their attention to Booker. That would have been the perfect cap on the night, but kind of redeemed himself with that steal on Curry when that was basically the last possession that mattered for Golden State, and they didn't even have a chance to get a shot off. So weird night shooting the ball for Curry, but I think the defensive energy from guys like Bridges and Johnson really were it's so easy with Golden State to be like, they miss shots, you get lucky. But, like, you still have to play well. You still have to execute down the stretch, and they really did. But two other plays that I was going to say were that Oubre transition 3. That was wild. It was 3 minutes left in the game. The Suns kind of go on a run. No one follows him down the court. He goes 1-on-4, and you're like, I thought they were going to call a timeout there. It looked like they were about to call a timeout, because no one else was getting down the court to play offense. And then Oubre just kind of, like he does, casually pumps into a 3 and nails it. And it was like that point in the game, you felt like, you know, they really need someone else to get involved. They're keying into Booker. How's the offense going to function down the stretch? Are we just going to see hero ball and the Warriors are going to do what they do? And Oubre extended the lead with that 3. And I was like, wow. And then late even later than that, offensive rebound. I think it was off of the Mikal miss from the corner. Ayton gets an offensive rebound. That really sealed it to me. So those two guys making key plays, I think, was part of what you weren't seeing early in the season, right? With Booker, he won some games, the Memphis game, et cetera, down the stretch. But to see the 1-9, really everybody kind of chipped in at one point or another, that I think is what got it done.
For sure. It was one of the best team efforts I've seen all season from the Suns, and it came in a win against the defending champions, so that's a really great side. But one more point I want to bring up here, going into our next segment, just about the closing lineup the Suns use. I found this data I found last night really interesting, because these numbers are just insane in my opinion. The 5-man lineup of Tyler Johnson, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre Jr., DeAndre Ayton has a net rating over the past 5 games of plus 59.5. And it's a 147.9 offensive rating, 88.4 defensive rating in 30 minutes. So in the last 5 games of closing out that lineup is pretty dangerous on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, they got to start it.
Do you think so?
Yeah, they have to start it. I mean, I was happy with what Bender was doing. I still am. I mean, he's playing more aggressively. His energy, I think, actually is a bright spot a lot of the time, even if he's on the bench. Like, this is a more impactful version of Bender in a very limited role. I think he should still be playing, but come on. Like, when you talk about the numbers, we all saw it down the stretch last night. Like, those guys fit perfectly together. The spacing is perfect with those. All 4 of those guys can shoot incredibly. Those are like legit NBA shooting on the court around Ayton and Booker. It's perfect. They have to start that lineup, and I think they will.
I agree with you. And one more point I wanted to end this on, because I think we should just end this after another solid Oubre performance with 22 points, 5 rebounds, a steal, and a block. 4 out of 5 wins now. TJ Warren has not been the floor for any of them, Brandon. Is this game once more just an example of them possibly making Warren expendable?
It is. I mean, we should talk about that. That's one of the things I want to hit on to close things out about just the kind of bigger picture of what a win like this means. But I think you're exactly right. And TJ was really excited on the bench yesterday. I'm sure people saw him. He was super involved getting excited and everything, but it has to feel a little awkward for him to see them doing this without him out there.
Yeah, definitely. And before we go on to our next segment, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked On NBA now on Twitter. It's one of the most valuable resources on NBA Twitter. Brian and I both follow the account, have our accounts synced on there as well, so you won't miss out on your Suns coverage you love here on Locked On Suns. But there's so many other great voices around a Locked On network you might be missing out on. So if you're not already doing so, go ahead and follow at Locked On NBA now on Twitter.
Want to also remind you guys about all the fantastic stuff going on at Homie. Homie's mission, I don't know if I've said this in a while, is to save customers thousands in commissions when you buy or sell a home using technology to make that process efficient and support you with a team of agents to make the process easy. To me, that sounds like just about everything you would need. And when I think about buying a house myself for the first time and finally stop moving from apartment to apartment, renting and just being stressed out with dealing with all of the hassle that can go into that and then the hassle that'll go into buying, I'd see what Homie's doing and it makes me really excited because I know that there's a place that I can go where I won't be nickeled and dimed, I won't be taken advantage of, and I won't really have that much stress. What Homie does is sells your price for a flat fee of $1,500. That is going to save you on average over $10,000 when you think about how expensive most houses are and how much most real estate agents are going to try to charge you. They can also help you qualify for a loan to make the process of buying your dream home even easier. And on the back end, help you qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund to help you with those closing costs. So as you can see, they're taking every step of the process and making it smoother, cheaper, and more comfortable for you to buy that dream home. To learn even more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, take out your phone, text Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All right, let's start with TJ, because that is one of the things I can tell we were both on the same wavelength last night watching that game with Warren in street clothes for. Do you know how many games he's missed consecutively now? You're usually keeping up with that better than me.
I think it's right now 17, or I think it's 18.
Yeah, so right ankle soreness still, and seeing that Lonzo Ball diagnosis, he's going to miss the rest of the season. He had a grade 3 right ankle sprain, or I don't know if it was his right ankle. It's TJ's right ankle, and Lonzo got shut down for the rest of the year. There's still a lot of games left. There's still 14 games left this season, but not only what you think about whether TJ even plays, but I think the team's showing that, again, for how many reminders we've had over the course of his career now, that the way he plays and the impact he has, you can win without it. And I think they're really proving that right now.
For sure. I think just because TJ, on one end of the floor, he's great. He's a great scorer. But on the other end of the floor, and also if you add in playmaking too, he's just a zero on that end. And you add in a guy like Oubre, who at least does one other thing, which is play defense. And at least I think he has – pretty much equal tunnel vision, I'd say. I'll go to you on that, but I feel like it's pretty similar as far as Oubre and Warren, my tunnel vision goes. But just more athletic, better defender. You also had a Mikal Bridges too and Josh Jackson. You're just better defenders. Warren's the best shooter of the bunch, maybe outside Mikal Bridges. But if you're just a one-faceted player, especially in today's NBA, Brent, you need versatility. And unfortunately, I don't think TJ provides as much versatility as you need on this team.
No, I think he doesn't. And I think your point on tunnel vision is true. I think that Oubre definitely looks to get his own. That's pretty obvious most of the time. We just talked about that pull-up three in transition in a really important spot. I mean, if that shot doesn't go in, I think we're probably screaming about it today, wondering what was going through his head, but he made it. And so I think you're right, but I also think Oubre just plays the game smarter on offense. And I think what I keep going back to, we talk about team defense a lot, right? I mean, you know, guys like D'Anthony Melton, Mikal Bridges, even Oubre himself, good team defenders, or at least growing, improving team defenders. And we don't talk about team offense a lot, but I think that's where Warren is really lacking. You know, he just doesn't seem like he, I don't know if it's buy-in, if it's the being able to read the game, but when he's in there, the ball's not moving as crisply, the decision-making's not as sound, the offense isn't quite as efficient. We've seen him get up big scoring nights, but it's not like this. You know, I don't think he could score 22 points and play 33 minutes and beat the Warriors. Like, I just don't think the Suns win that game last night if he's in Oubre's role. Maybe if he's in Jackson's role, maybe things are different, but I don't know if, you know, it's just kind of the overall question with Warren is like, will he accept a smaller role? How does that work? And what does that look like? And is it even worth it to pay somebody his salary and have them be just kind of a bit player? And we still 4 or 5 years into his career now haven't really seen the evidence that he can be out there and be a part of a team and really still impact winning basketball.
Yeah, and also he's, I think, only been available for about 60% of his career games over the past 4.5 years. Just kind of is a concern, especially with the injury history. But I think you bring up a good point there about TJ, and just I'm thinking more about just how he could fit when he comes back in the rotation, if he comes back at all, because Alonzo went out, I think, the day before TJ Warren did with his ankle injury. But now when you look at this, it's around 6.5 weeks right now for TJ Warren since his ankle injury. And I think if we wait another week or two, Brennan, and he still hasn't played yet, like for that, I think they're going to play at home against the Bulls, the Pelicans, and the Pistons in the next week or so. So if he's not back by then for that 2 or 3 game homestand, then I think I'm officially concerned that he might be shut down for the rest of the season.
Yeah, games played. I'm not going to say that I remember his rookie season. I'm sure some of his rookie season he didn't play because he was a rookie, but 40, 47, 66, 65, 43 total career games played over each season for Warren. This would be the lowest since 2015-16 for him if he did end up finishing the year only playing 43 games and has never gone over 2,100 minutes. So just I think that's really going to be a consideration, especially with Oubre's breakout. We thought the decision might be Jackson or Oubre, I think, because of how well Warren was playing when they acquired Oubre. But I think the decision, you know, Jackson hasn't really done a ton for himself, but just because he's younger, we might be having the Warren versus Oubre decision this summer. And I think you and I are pretty much in agreement on where we would fall there, and that would be Oubre. But we should also hit on, I want to touch back to that Igor point. Do you feel like the team, how related do you think this stretch is to those rumors of Igor potentially getting fired? Do you think they're actually responding that way, or do you think that's an oversimplification and they're really just getting a lot better and gelling at the right time?
I think it's the latter there. I feel like if it was about the firing thing, I feel like we'd be hearing more about that. That's why they're playing so hard. But I think it's just them gelling at the right time, because I think, especially when we beat the Lakers when they're still trying at that point, the Bucks and the Warriors in about an 8-day span. That kind of tells you all you need to know right there. I feel like this team's actually turning a corner, and against three quality teams and the defending champions too on their home court down by 13 at the end of the first quarter. That's a response. I think that's one you can build off of right there for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the Igor thing was maybe even a little overstated. I feel like most of the time, if that was the drive, kind of like you're saying, they probably would have said it, right? They would, Booker or one of the other leaders on this team probably would have just come out and said, like, you know, we heard what was going on out there and we wanted to show everybody how we really could play as a team. And that's been the drive. Like, we would have heard about it. But what do you think this is good enough, kind of staying on Igor, to if they can keep this up, and who knows what the wins will look like, but if they can just look like this and steal some games, and they're going to have, like you mentioned, a nice, easy home stretch coming up here, do you think this buys him some time? Do you think this makes the decision this summer about whether to retain him? That it has to change how the front office is looking at his job security, right?
For sure. I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I don't feel like it is, but after winning the past 5 of the 7 games, I feel like he's safe for next season already. I mean, against this stretch of teams, especially with Milwaukee and Golden State and Los Angeles, I mean, that's all you need to know. And he still doesn't have a starting caliber point guard yet on the roster. I mean, Tyler Johnson obviously qualifies as that, but Tyler Johnson's not on the level like a Jrue Holiday or like a elite point guard like that. So just imagine what he could be like with a point guard that's on that level. But even if they lose the last 10 or 15 games, Brian, I feel like at this point, Igor's saved his job, because I think last night was the best Suns win out of any of the past Suns two or three coaches, to be honest. And even if they do win, even if they do lose 10 of the last 15 games, finish like 20 or 21 wins, I don't mind that. I think continuity is the most important thing for this team right now, for sure.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome just for, I mean, maybe this only matters to people like us that look at the numbers so much about where they were on track to finish and where they might finish. But I think it'd feel pretty good in that locker room to, after how they were at 11 wins like 3 weeks ago, to be able to get past 21 and finish better than last season. I think that has to feel pretty good, especially for the guys who were around last year, because I was watching some of the videos that Dwayne Rankin of AZ Central put up in his recap story last night, and he got Booker on camera saying, he, after the All-Star break, was talking to the guys and said, basically, so many players, so many teams around the league with what we've been through the past 2 years would be able to put their head down and just give up. But we have this opportunity with 20 or so games left. Let's see what we can do and see how high we can get. And I think we're seeing that. I mean, I think he's right. I mean, the end of last season is we saw exactly that. You know, the front office was benching guys, the coaches were benching guys, the young players kind of were just going through the motions. This is the exact opposite of the way that the Suns closed the season last year. And that mentality has to be a humongous part of it. And I think that's another area where Igor deserves credit.
Now, here's an interesting question I wanted to ask you before we go on to our next segment, just because this is a more of a long-term question. It relates to Kelly Oubre. Since we started on TJ, might as well end on Kelly. He might be his replacement later on. And I was doing some interesting number dives on Basketball Reference last night, Brandon. We talked about some trade targets like Aaron Gordon, Kevin Love, but I compared Kelly Oubre to Aaron Gordon this season per 36 minutes, and they look pretty identical. Oubre is averaging 19.2 points, 1.5 steals, 1.1 blocks. Gordon's at 17.1 points, 0.7 steals, 0.8 blocks. Oubre also has a better PER, a better true shooting percentage, a better free throw rate, almost an identical rebound rate too, and a better steal plus block rate. Do you think we're overrating the need for a power forward if Oubre can play like this? And like we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, that five-man lineup with Oubre, Bridges, Johnson, Booker, and Aiden, is that a legit five-man lineup that could work long-term here?
I think that it is, and maybe a better point guard in that lineup and have Johnson be kind of your third guard playing heavy minutes there. I think that's a perfect role for him. You think about, not to sidetrack us, but you think about Johnson and how well he's been playing, having him as a backup, holy crap. Like, to go from Kanan to a starter, a better than Johnson, and Johnson off the bench would be incredible. But that overall lineup, as we hit on before, has been awesome. And Oubre, I think, is a huge reason why. And I don't know if he necessarily is a guy you want as a full-time four, but to have that versatility there is another leg up that he has on Warren defensively, to be able to play both of those positions, space the floor, play physically, rebound especially. We've seen him just rack up rebounds on some nights, getting double digits pretty consistently. So the way he's been able to play up a position so capably has, I think, definitely helped. I agree that, especially like a guy like Aaron Gordon, I think he's already going to be paid much more than Oubre will be, probably just because of where he was drafted and the franchise that kind of felt like they had to pay him in Orlando. But I think you still maybe want a veteran four there, somebody who can maybe start at the four and Oubre starts at the three or something like that. But I think Oubre has surpassed expectations as far as his ability to move up and still hold up. That was the big knock on Warren. It's like, sure, he, like, technically you can say he's the power forward and he's playing well, but is he playing well as a big? No, not really. But Oubre has.
Before we go on to our next segment here, guys, I want to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA show. It has some great hosts on there: Jake Madison, Anthony Irwin on one day, Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy on another day, David Locke of Locked On Jazz on another. We have so many great hosts on the Locked On NBA show. If you're not already checking it out, it's every weekday. It's Monday through Friday. It's one of the best weekly podcasts that are out there on the NBA network. And if you're not already doing so, subscribe to the Locked On NBA show. I already do. Brennan does. We listen to it every week, and you should be too.
We have a new sponsor I want to tell you guys about, but it will sound familiar. It is MyBookie. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year, whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above. MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with the title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year? I really hope so. And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. I'm going to be that guy this year, I think. I'm going to be the guy filling out multiple brackets because I'm pretty pissed. I haven't done well since Mikal Bridges was a freshman, so I got to get back in there. But MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business, and the best part is they pay you out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours fast. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code LOCKEDONNBA, as Evan just said, LOCKEDONNBA, for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. With MyBookie, you play, you win, and you get paid. Alrighty, let us move on here. And I mean, I kind of want to talk about the next few weeks, but is there anything else from this game that you think is important to hit on, or can we kind of see where this could go?
Yeah, we can just look ahead a little bit, just to clarify to the listeners. This is probably a different episode than you're usually used to with our free throws and flagrant fouls and our staff to watch. We're doing it a little different this time just because it was such a monumental win. But just want to clarify it real quick to the listener.
Yeah, and the back-to-back is so weird. And we got another one next weekend. So let us know if this works for you guys, because it would have been hard to do flagrant fouls for that one, right? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
All righty. But we got Utah coming in on Wednesday, which is actually coincidental because I don't know if people were on Twitter last night, but Donovan Mitchell was clearly watching the game, pretty excited about the Suns. So maybe we could tone it down with the Booker versus Mitchell stuff. They'll have the chance to duke it out on the court on Wednesday, but maybe on Twitter we could chill about comparing these guys every time they have big games, because two players can be good at the same time, and that'll be okay. But Utah's going to be a challenge. Houston on the road, another challenge. But then they have at New Orleans versus Chicago versus Detroit at Sacramento. Those are all, I mean, maybe every game's winnable if they keep playing like this. I think they've proven that. But especially that four-game stretch, that's a lot of mediocre or worse teams and two of them at home.
Yeah, I really think they could win those latter four games, three out of the last four, really. And I think the Jazz game could be a loss. I think the Rockets game will be a loss. But those last four games, the Pelicans, Bulls, Pistons, and Kings, I think he would win at least three of those four games. And if this is a legit turnaround, I honestly wouldn't be shocked if they won Wednesday against Utah either, because they play Utah pretty good sometimes. I know Utah's pulling them out. But usually in Phoenix, they play them good, and I think Ewer will have those guys up and ready for his former team. So I think this could be a really interesting stretch here, Brent. I could see if we're just going to guess these six games here, if you want to do that. Sure. I think they're going to go, let's see, I'll go Jazz loss, Rockets loss, Pelicans loss. They're 0-3 right now, but I think they're going to go winning against the Bulls, winning against the Pistons, and winning it at the Kings. So I'll say lose their first three, win their last three.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm on the same track as you. I thought, honestly, that to be completely open, I thought they'd lose four in a row after the three-game win streak. I thought they would lose to Portland, lose to Golden State, lose to Utah, lose to Houston, just because that could be the top four teams in the West when all is said and done. That's a crazy stretch of games to have to go up against after winning so much. But so I will continue that, unfortunately. I think Utah and Houston are just great teams. So loss, loss. But then at New Orleans, I'll go win. Versus Chicago, win. Versus Detroit, win. At Sacramento, win. So I think they could win four of those games, and they'll be at, if they do that, they would be at 20 wins with about a half dozen games to go, a little more, eight or nine games to go in the season, and they have a nice, beefy home stretch to finish things off. So we could really see this team surpass what they did last year, especially if they play anywhere near the level that they did last night.
Okay, so right now the Suns are, we have it at 3-3, have it at 4-2, over that six-game stretch. The Suns are 16-52 right now. Last year they won 21 total games. At this point in the season, on today's date, which is March 11th, do you think that these Suns win more than 21 games?
Yeah, I think I will definitely say that they do. They would have to just go 6-8 over their final 14. That would have sounded crazy a while ago, but that's not that unreasonable. And looking at the Tankathon really quickly here too, Cleveland. What's up?
I was just saying that separation is big in the lottery standings too.
Exactly. So they just have to finish in the top four to feel pretty good. Top three, ideally. But Chicago's, even with the Suns winning so much lately, Chicago's just been on a tear. All their guys are really playing well. So they're at 9 wins already. Cleveland is tied with the Suns at 16 wins, and they still have Kevin Love out there raising their floor a little bit. So to me, I really don't think that should factor in at all. I don't think it will. But even if fans kind of want continue to keep up with that, I think the Suns are still, they were so bad for so long there in the winter that they're not really in danger. They're also two games up in the loss column on Cleveland too. They've played two more games and they've lost both of those extra games. So they're in a fine position for the lottery as well. This is a pretty ideal way for the season to break down, where they can just play their hardest, win. They don't have to worry about shutting guys down or anything like that. And they'll be in perfect position to still have a chance at Zion.
Could you imagine if they, let's say, win five to seven games over the final 15 games, they finish with 22, 23 wins, they finish, like, let's say, the three slot in the reverse standings, they still finish a game behind Chicago, so to say. What if they have a great end of the season year, 500 basketball the last month of the season, and on the cherry on top of that, they get Zion Williamson? Like,
it would be pretty fantastic. Those season ticket renewals would be rolling in.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
And people should be telling people about our podcast in that case, because we're going to see a lot of bandwagon fans this summer if they finish like that and get a good player in draft. So not to make it about us, but if you see your fan friend, your friend pulling out a hat he hasn't worn in like 6 or 7 years, and you're like, where did that come from? Why do you just have the old logo on a hat? Be like, oh, you should also check out this podcast because it's really good. And they were doing it when you weren't paying attention. So you should listen now that you are paying attention.
Yeah, we literally are going from, we're on the rise with the Suns. We've been at the lowest point with them over the last 18 months. Now, hopefully it's the highest point in the last 18 months. So appreciate you guys listening in. If you're not already, go ahead and go on your iTunes right now and give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate those reviews, by the way. So go on iTunes. We miss those reviews. Leave a comment there too. So if you have a question on there, we'll answer some questions too. So we wanted to use the iTunes section a little bit more just because we wanted to get our reviews up a little bit. We're kind of lacking on that with our listeners. So go ahead and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And anything else you want to add on today's podcast, Brendan?
No, excited to see what happens here Wednesday against the Jazz. And we'll be back tomorrow talking with the Dime Drop, J. Kyle Mann of the Dime Drop, which will be a fun episode. His videos are awesome. I'm sure you guys have seen those.
Yeah, he actually was also live at Murray's Evansville, where you saw Robert Sarver in person with all the other Suns front office. He saw John Morant live in person for the past few days. So we'll definitely talk about a possible Phoenix Suns point guard too. So in the meantime, guys, we'll talk to you later, and we'll